This week on Your Western Context, in BC we learned that improper disposal of cigarettes can cause major issues. Canada lost over 50,000 jobs in August, and the possible implementation of a handgun ban might not solve crime. Also, we correct Trudeau on his definition of the word entropy. This is Western Context, Episode 84, recorded Saturday, September 8th, 2018. The Entropy of Diversity. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Western Context. Patrick and myself are back, as we are each and every week.
It's good to be back again, you know, now that we're heading into September and the weather's starting to change and different things are happening in the world of politics as well as the world of news that we've been following this week. And it's been interesting to see some of the stories that have come out this week, a couple that were pretty surprising and a few others that we will delve into a bit more, of course.
Yeah, and some were kind of expected on that front as well. But if you're joining us for the first time, what Western Context is we're a podcast that aims to cut through the bias and sensationalism that you find in the news media and bring that to you with an increasing level of clarity. And we do that, and we provide you all the information and context necessary to put you on the right side of the news. And we're going to get started off in BC this week. So what do we got?
So it's been a pretty quiet week in BC, you know, after all the aftermath of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. That's what people are still talking about. But other than that, there really hasn't been that much news. So we're going to go super local and talk a bit about the Saanich Tent City, which we have talked about on the podcast before as well, and to talk about how something quite as small as a cigarette can have such a huge impact on the province as a whole. So Saanich in the province were granted an interim injunction Friday to shut down the homeless camp in Regina Park, which is just outside of Victoria in Saanich. Now, Saanich was calling for the site to be vacated by 7 p.m. on this upcoming Tuesday, and fire danger was a prime reason for the decision, BC Supreme Court Justice Ward Branch said in delivering his judgment. Branch said that the establishment of the camp in late April was part of a broader attempt to raise awareness of homelessness, and that governments are making some progress in providing needed housing. And while the camp has been a central point for service agencies to help people, there have also been mounting problems. Branch said that there is an increasing evidence of rats, garbage, urine, feces, and needles permeating throughout the camp, which was creating a lot of health risks as well. Now, the interim injunction will last up to 10 months, at which point a trial would proceed on whether to grant a permanent injunction. Saanich Mayor Richard Atwell welcomed the ruling and expressed hope that the campers will vacate the park voluntarily. In a statement, he read that Saanich's goal since the beginning of the encampment has been to achieve voluntary compliance with its bylaws, he said, reading from a statement. He said, in the face of open defiance by the encampment and its leadership, as well as significant and increasing health and safety risks, it has become necessary to seek the assistance of the court. Atwell said that the interim injunction will allow Saanich to clear and remediate Regina Park, a task that is expected to take 2 to 3 weeks. He said that Saanich will treat the vulnerable persons vacating the park with dignity and care throughout the decamment process, he said. So it's been interesting that Justice Branch came to his decision to grant the injunction based on fire safety, given that last Sunday a huge fire broke out in the camp that sent smoke billowing out over the Trans-Canada Highway that the camp is adjacent to. Now, residents say that they used donated fire extinguishers and jugs of water to put out the blaze and prevent it from spreading to nearby tents. The Saanich Fire Department said it received a report of a structure fire and possible explosion at 12:05 p.m., just afternoon, and responded with two engines, a ladder truck, a tanker, and a rescue truck. Assistant Deputy Fire Chief Brock Henson said the response to the fire was timely. He said, quote, they found a smoldering tent fire, and they made sure the fire was good and extinguished, and thankfully there were no injuries that took place. He added that it's fortunate that the fire broke out during the day when there were people around to take notice and respond. He said that, quote, people contacted us very, very quickly, and both occupants and ourselves were able to respond very quickly. He said, our greatest concern from a life safety perspective is a fire like that taking place at nighttime. He said the cause of the fire remains under investigation. However, quote, the individual who was occupying the tent wasn't in the tent at the time, but he advised our incident commander that he may have left a lit cigarette inside the tent. So all of that came down basically from a cigarette that someone left, and it could have caused, you know, quite an untold number of deaths, destruction. And given that there hasn't been much rain in the Victoria area until just yesterday, it could have spread quite quickly just because of a cigarette. Now, it's not the only time that a cigarette has been the cause of headlines in the Victoria area in the past week. On Wednesday evening, a motorist threw a cigarette out of his vehicle at just the wrong time, doing the deed right in front of Victoria Police Chief Del Manek. Manek asked on Twitter, quote, "Can you believe people are still throwing lit cigarettes out their vehicle window? Sorry, but I can't ignore it when it happens right in front of me. The driver said I would never do it near the grass. The excuse didn't work. Hashtag be smart." So also on Wednesday morning on the Trans-Canada Highway, a motorist was fortunate to be unharmed following a early morning vehicle fire on the Malahat. The driver of the burnt-out pickup truck reportedly discarded a cigarette butt out the window, but it flew back into the cab and sparked a fire, according to a witness. The driver behind the pickup tried to warn the man that smoke was billowing from his vehicle, but he remained unaware of the situation until it was too late. And now, in the wake of widespread plastic straw bans due to ocean pollution, studies have been released showing that cigarette butts are actually much more harmful for ocean safety. According to the Cigarette Butt Pollution Project, 5.5 trillion cigarettes are consumed every year, with 90% of them containing a plastic-based cigarette filter. Now, the cigarette filters are made from cellulose acetate, which is an artificial fiber that takes decades to break down. NBC News reports that two-thirds of those filters are dumped, many of which make their way to oceans and beaches. And as we have wildfire season coming to a close in BC with the bringing of rainy weather across the province, it's important to note that humans have caused more than 400 of the wildfires that have been burning the province and sending much of Western Canada into a hazy apocalyptic landscape this past summer. Now, many of these fires were caused by cigarettes. Therefore, in conclusion, it's pretty interesting to note that how these media reports all of these issues separately, but not much attention is given to the fact that lots of smokers are careless with their cigarettes, and clearly something should be done about it.
And this is precisely why we're here, that information and context that puts people on the right side of the news. And you know, you have to read this story and see someone throws a burning cigarette out their window, it flies back in, and they don't realize that their car is on fire, and the person behind them can't even raise them to alert them of that until it's too late. And you know, that's one side of the equation, but the other side of this is going in regards to the tent city, in that, you know, this is really just a microcosm of what happens with tent cities in general. And that, you know, yes, there are places where people gather and there are places where people stay who might be homeless, but when it comes down to it, they are dangerous from a public health perspective, and as we're seeing in this case, a safety perspective. And you know, you can also extend this out to most residential housing fires that happen as well. A good portion of those housing fires are caused by people who smoke carelessly, fall asleep, leave it burning, and next thing you know, the house is on fire. So whether it's a tent city or truck or even anyone else's house, it is indeed a major issue. So that's point one on this. And you know, normally everyone prefers to talk about the stories that generate much more interest and bigger headlines. Well, you know, anytime you want to reduce preventable deaths, this is one way of doing it right here. And the second one on this is that we've been hearing about straws the entire summer and the entire spring, but you know, you have to ask the people who are manufacturing cigarettes on this, what are they going to do about this? Should they be taxed more? They probably won't be, because as we all know, cigarettes and soon to be marijuana are a huge source of tax revenue for the government. So they really don't want to touch that portion of the pie either, in terms of discouraging people from continuing with it. Though I think numbers on that are at a record low stage at this point in time in history. But you know, we look at everything here, and when it comes down to it, the straws are what everyone loved to talk about because it was that picture of the tortoise with a straw up its nose. And, you know, we're living in an era as well where you can have a picture of that happening, but at the same time, you have to ask, you know, a picture might be worth a thousand words, but is a picture a cause today to get riled up about and have the media pursue that, when in reality, pictures don't necessarily tell the full story unless you have the context of it. And I think context is very important because straws are one side of it. But as we see here, the cigarette butts are a much, much larger issue.
Yeah, that's exactly true. You know, with all of the public safety concerns that have been going on this past summer with all the wildfires happening, it's really quite amazing that the media hasn't really been taking much note of all of the human causes of all these fires and all the public safety concerns. Like I said, all of these stories that we just read out, they were kind of produced in a vacuum, as in they were just like single standalone, whereas you have to really look at the greater picture and see that they're all kind of connected in a way, in the fact when it comes to things like the tent city and the public safety concerns that arose from that, not just within the city itself, but by the residents going out into the community, but also the fact that a lot of these things are preventable, and the fact that the media hasn't really been talking about how preventable these things are, you know, being able to, you know, put out like public safety announcements, that sort of thing. And it's something that they haven't really been doing much of. And you kind of have to look at all the stories and try and bring them all together to talk about one central issue, which these all, you know, they all appear to be about. And the fact that that hasn't been happening, it just goes to show that the media is just interested in generating those headlines and not actually talking about the major issue behind it.
Indeed. And, you know, there's been a push also to move towards paper straws or otherwise biodegradable straws and cups, you know, Starbucks and whatnot are companies that are behind that. And, you know, you could ask the same question. Are cigarette manufacturers going to move towards paper filters? Or maybe they'll go back to the era of the 1940s and 50s when they didn't put filters in their cigarettes. Granted, yes, they were more dangerous, but maybe if that helps the environment, that might be something they could look at doing. And that could be further cost that people who decide to smoke could look into.
Indeed. And I think that that's something that government should be looking at as well, because, you know, after all, the government is there to handle issues on the public's behalf. And I think to be able to handle this on the public's behalf is something that would benefit the public, because cigarettes, as we've said before, it does have a huge impact on tax revenue. But in this case, if governments want to preach that they are, you know, for the government, for the environment rather, and that they're interested in protecting it, this is something that they can actually do that's very tangible that would be able to fix it.
That's right. I don't think we have much else to say on this one, so we can move on to our Alberta/Canada story this week, because this one kind of ties the both of them together. And this one comes from the August Statistics Canada jobs report, and also another linkage that wasn't necessarily made by the media this week. So we'll get to that in just a moment. So the headline reads as though Canada lost 51,600 jobs this past month. A growth of 5,000 was instead forecasted. So that's a pretty sharp difference there, net difference of 46,000 into the red on the jobs front. And this was led in large part by a drop of 80,100 jobs in Ontario, and these were all part-time. Nationally, though, the country lost 92,000 part-time jobs, but this was partially offset by a gain of 40,400 full-time workers. Now that's what's happening on the federal stage, and we can jump over to the Alberta side of this right now, because you might be wondering what's happening in Alberta. Well, the Alberta unemployment rate remained constant at 6.7%, and the BC unemployment rate ticked up to 5.3% from 5%, and this is well within the margin of error within the report. So we can pretty much say that BC's unemployment rate also remained constant. Now, drilling further down into the Alberta numbers with this, the unemployment rate in Calgary increased from 7.9% to 8.2%. Calgary remains the second highest unemployment rate in the country, right behind St. John's, Newfoundland. So while the report might look good for the rest of Alberta, this uptick is ultimately very concerning for the city of Calgary and the energy sector that is headquartered in Calgary. It means that the economic recovery that's been felt in other parts of the province, namely Edmonton and whatnot, isn't happening, at least not in Calgary. And this is in large part due to the oil companies being reluctant to hire due to questions that might remain within the economy. And, you know, we've talked a lot about this going forward with this because, you know, last week we had that decision regarding the Trans Mountain Pipeline. And quite frankly, with that ruling, the situation is not going to get better anytime soon. It could actually potentially get worse with this. Now, you might be wondering, okay, what else is happening this week on this front? Well, the federal government's new bill to overhaul the National Energy Board, and basically what this means is that the federal government is introducing a new law, and they basically want to revamp the National Energy Board. And what the National Energy Board is responsible for is it's responsible for reviewing all energy projects in Canada, so whether they be hydro or LNG-based, if they're national, or the biggest one that we're, of course, concerned with today and this past week is pipelines. And this bill is known as C-69, and it's slated to hit the Senate this month. And there's lots of friction about this bill, let's just say. So much so that many environment ministers across the country are raising concerns about this. Saskatchewan's environment minister called the bill an existential threat to their province's competitiveness. And even Alberta NDP Energy Minister Marg McQuaid-Boyd said that our government has serious concerns, including what does this mean for project timelines? And that is, of course, the timelines that it takes to build a project, get it approved, and actually go from concept all the way to getting shovels in the ground, so to speak, as the politicians like to say, on any energy project. And, you know, in general, ministers across the country have been lobbying their federal counterparts all summer long and even bringing forward the alert that in talking with industry, many people in industry say that they won't be making new investments in our country. And, you know, it's at this point that we need to remind our listeners and basically just inform new listeners that when it comes to investment in a country, the power of investment to create jobs and to grow the economy and to get those GDP numbers up and get those unemployment numbers down cannot be understated. And before a company wants to invest, they will need to see that their money is going to experience growth. And there's not going to be any bumps in the road along the way, as we recently saw with the court decision regarding the Trans Mountain Pipeline. So the power of investment, basically, in a nutshell, means that it can lead to better job growth in cities like Calgary. And that's precisely what Calgary needs today to get this unemployment rate numbered down. Because Calgary is a city that is focused around the energy economy of Alberta and the energy economy of Canada. So many energy companies have their headquarters in Calgary. And because of that, this is why the job growth rate in Calgary hasn't recovered. So when you look at this new bill and the potential friction it could be facing in the Senate, this is just even more question for any company that's looking for investment in Canada. Now, following the court decision last week on the Trans Mountain Pipeline, Bill Morneau, the federal finance minister, said that our government inherited a flawed environmental review process and we've made efforts to improve it. And, you know, if you look at what's been happening, if you look at what's been chatted about this week with the Senate, you look at the courts and what's happening in the courts with Trans Mountain, you look at what's happening with investment as a whole, these are not the improvements as far as the energy industry is concerned that Bill Morneau is talking about. In fact, they're the total opposite of improvements. Now, the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, which is basically an organization that focuses on providing a voice to the oil industry to bring their points of view towards levels of government, whether they be in Alberta or at the federal level, they basically said this week that there's a regulatory system in Canada that's so complex and that not even the government or the regulators understand the system as it currently is in Canada. And as a result of this, the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers wants a simpler and more straightforward, easy-to-understand regulatory system. And, you know, you would think that the federal government would want to do this, and Bill C-69 would be something that would be putting the country on path for that. But Bill C-69 does the polar opposite of that. Bill C-69 doesn't even spell out what kind of projects would fall under its jurisdiction. The bill, Bill C-69, is being passed into law shortly, and it's going through this process in the Senate, and it could potentially be passed while the list of projects that will fall under its umbrella are still being developed by the relevant stakeholders who are working on this legislation. So let's just let that sink in for a minute. The Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers and Industry in general wants a simpler regulatory process, but at the same time, Bill Morneau says the government is making inroads on ensuring that the process is simpler. But on the other hand, we have Bill C-69, which is moving its way through the Senate, moving its way through committee, and the government isn't even sure what projects will fall under its jurisdiction yet. So that's a pretty big deal for investment, and that can definitely pour some cold water on companies who are looking at investment. Now, you would think that, you know, this might just be all economic theory, but in fact, Suncor announced this week that they won't approve any more expansions until the country makes progress on approving pipelines. Suncor says they want to see physical progress on the ground before they can commit to any more expansions. And no, this isn't just pipeline expansions. Suncor is also holding off on expanding mining and drilling operations in Canada as well. Now, in one more act of disruption, the federal government has blocked an opposition motion to call key ministers to lay out the next step of the Trans Mountain pipeline expansion. Basically, what the opposition wanted to do is they wanted to hold a six-session study of the government's plan in the wake of the decision last week made by the courts. The discussion would have took place in committee and would have been televised for the media and Canadians to watch. But the government of the day, the majority government, the majority Liberals, basically shut this idea down. Now, let's just recap where we're at. It's been over a week. We don't know what the government's next steps are to get the pipeline built and restart the process. The government says they're analyzing the option, and then we'll inform Canadians of what has been decided to get the project back on track. So to sum it up, the lack of clarity with Trans Mountain, the uncertainty regarding Bill C-69, which would overhaul the NEB and the approval processes and add more projects to that list, combined with the general feeling of disruption, are causing companies like Suncor and Kinder Morgan and others to consider slowing their investment into Canada. And this is in turn causing the slow recovery that we're seeing in cities like Calgary across the energy industry. And when you sum all this up, we have a collection of stories that, you know, are somewhat unlinked, but they're all intrinsically linked at that national level. And the media didn't provide that information and didn't link that to provide context to their viewers.
Yeah, and I think the context in this case is that there seems to be a growing lack of a positive business signals being sent by the government. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, in that if the government signals to business that it is ready for investment, these are things like such as easier regulations or increased investment, or even just being able to get projects done, which, as we've seen with this federal government, there's been a huge lack of that in the energy industry. So it's no wonder that a lot of these companies are not wanting to have any more investment in Canada, because they're going to be stopped at every turn that they make. We've seen this definitely with Kinder Morgan. We've seen it with the Trans Mountain Pipeline. We've seen this with Energy East and Northern Gateway that got basically canceled before they could even get off the ground. And basically nothing else has gone on with it as well. So it's quite you can't really blame the companies for not wanting to invest any more money in, because they don't think that they're going to be able to make a return on it, just simply due to the fact that the federal government can't get these projects approved.
Yeah, and you know, it's very much a case of, you know, passing legislation without knowing its full consequences. And, you know, there was a classic example of this in the past. It was once upon a time said that when in 2009 the American government was passing Obamacare, the the piece of legislation was so long that it was said that there wasn't a single Congress member that had read the entire piece of legislation. And we're in a similar situation today where they're trying to push Bill C-69 through, but no one knows what projects will fall under its umbrella and what the approval process will be for those projects. But yet, the bill is still trying to be passed. And when you go up to the higher level, this is precisely why these companies are expressing a lack of interest in our economy.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you have a particular sector such as the energy industry that has such a huge impact on not just employment in Canada, but also when it comes to revenue and things like tax revenue, it's almost like the government's trying to bite the hand that feeds it in this case, and it's pretty intangible when we look at the unemployment numbers when particular areas are doing much better, but then others are not doing any better. We can actually extrapolate those numbers down to the various industries that have a huge impact on the cities that they're in. And I think that's clearly what we're seeing in Calgary with such a high number there, is that people are clearly wanting to work, but they're just not having the opportunities to do that. And it comes back to the companies, which ends up going back to the government and the decisions that they've made over the past, three years that they've been in power.
Yeah, and before we move on, I will just say that you don't have an economic recovery if you have the second highest unemployment rate in the country. I think we can leave it at that. So before we move on to our next story, I'll just take a moment to remind listeners about our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/westerncontext. And we offer three tiers of support. For $2 a month, which is effectively the price of a cup of coffee, you'll help us remove bias and sensationalism from the news and media. For $5 a month, you can help us continue to remove that bias and sensationalism, and you can also have your name read out on the podcast if you want. And for $10 a month, you can become a Western Context insider and gain an insight into our work and gain access to our pre-release show notes and production throughout the entirety of the week. So you might be wondering, what are we going to do with this? Well, if we reach $25 per month or more in contributions, you can expect a news and review podcast every other month where we reflect on the state of the media and we reflect on the news and provide our thoughts on it in a more candid way and provide our opinion on where affairs might be headed next. And at $50 a month, you can expect online town halls hosted every quarter. Topics of discussion will include the news of the month, the state of the media, and your questions. You can find out more about this at westerncontext.ca/support. And we also have an option there to make a one-time donation via PayPal. All the information on that can be found at westerncontext.ca/support. So what's next?
So from the death of energy companies and the death of jobs in Calgary, we're going to actually go on to actual deaths, in which case we've seen this in Toronto, and we've seen an alarming number of homicides this year so far in Toronto. According to police, there have been 73 different homicides in the city so far this year, which is 7 more than the number for all of 2017. And out of those so far, 37 were shootings, 16 were stabbings, and 20 were other incidents. That included that huge van attack that happened back in North York, which was just north of downtown Toronto. So we've seen that the months of April, June, and July and August have also had the most number of homicides. And there is a very interesting map that was news of Toronto that actually mapped where all of these locations took place. And with this, we're seeing a huge increase by municipal governments and the provincial governments and the federal government to explore a possible handgun ban in the cities and basically across the country as well. This is something that's come about from both the Toronto and Montreal city councils, and Toronto Mayor John Tory, he's been a strong advocate of having a handgun ban, and they've also been looking to ask the province to halt the sale of handgun ammunition, and they've been in close discussions with the federal government as well. Now, the federal government hasn't really given a straight answer on what they were going to do on this, which is par for the course for them, I feel. they're saying that they're going to only, quote, consider looking into a gun ban. Now, the new Minister of Organized Crime Reduction, Bill Blair, who, of course, was a former Toronto police chief, he said that the Liberals were open to exploring all options, but he stopped short of revealing what exactly was on the list of possibilities. However, we know that this is directly in his mandate, as it actually appeared in his mandate letter that, quote, you should lead an examination of a full ban on handguns and assault weapons in Canada while not impeding the lawful use of firearms by Canadians. So it's clear that the federal government is having a look at doing this handgun ban, but there's a lot of people that have been questioning about whether it's actually going to do any good, because after all, when we have things like homicides happening, these are clearly happening by criminals. And criminals generally don't buy their guns through lawful means, and they generally get them from either from other criminals or from the black market. So there is a few people that have questioned whether banning the lawful use of handguns would actually do anything to reduce the number of homicides. Mike McCormick, who is the president of the Toronto Police Association, he said, quote, there is no way in my world or any world that I know of that this would actually have an impact on somebody who's going to go out and buy an illegal gun and use it to kill another person or shoot another person. He said it really has no impact on the psyche of a gunman, and he said that it's a notional gesture at best. He said that he would rather see more resources poured into policing and into social services. And he also mentioned that his years of experience in policing have taught him something about gun crime. He said that individuals who steal, sell, or use guns illegally are already facing mountains of jail time, so that they're really unfazed by one more law that condemns their actions. Now, we've noticed that shootings have been on the rise for the past few years in Canada, and in 2016, it was one of the first times in the last while that more people were actually killed by guns than by knives. Now, I think it's important to note here that the majority of Canadians don't actually meet the requirements to legally own a handgun. Gun laws are currently quite restricting in who are able to actually own, purchase, and use a handgun firearm. A lot of these different types are restricted to collectors, target shooters, and those whose employment might require them to actually own a handgun, such as park rangers or police officers or anyone who deals with public safety. Now, handguns specifically are at the heart of the country's gun statistics. In total, in 2016, there were 130 homicides committed with a handgun, which was, of course, the highest number in more than a decade. And they only accounted for 21% of the total homicides that year, and more than half of the shooting homicides. Toronto Police Chief Mark Saunders told City Council earlier this summer that 50% of firearms are used for crimes that are from domestic sources. He said it's usually straw purchasing. This is basically lawful owners who purchase large amounts of firearms and then distribute them to the criminal entities. However, neither the RCMP nor Statistics Canada actually collect national statistics on whether guns are smuggled into the country or are sourced domestically. So there's a lot of question about where the origin of these firearms are actually coming from. A lot of people are speculating a lot of them come from the United States, and while that may be true, we don't actually have the statistics to be able to back that up. Now, there's also been a lot of talk in the media about the handgun ban, and there's been a lot of people that have been going against it, saying that it's quite necessary to have it. There was a report, actually, that came out that suggested that lawful Canadian gun owners were to blame for at least some of the violence. This article was originally published by the Canadian Press, and it was widely republished elsewhere, as is the case for a lot of news in Canada. So this report ended up being at the CBC, the National Post, a bunch of different local newspapers across Toronto, CTV News, as well as Global News. So since then, it's been widely cited in other news stories covering the issue, including the Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, basically everywhere that you go to find news in Canada. The problem is that the report was actually wrong. because it was actually based around an interview with a Toronto Police Services detective, Rob DiDonnelly. Now, DiDonnelly had told the Canadian press that Canadians who were lawfully licensed to purchase and possess firearms were increasingly a public safety issue. He said that they go get their license for the purpose of becoming a firearms trafficker, and that a lot of people are so ready to blame the big bad Americans, but we have our own little problem here. So this whole report that came out about this and that was published across the entire country, basically, was based on this one little thing. And it basically notes in several places that the number of guns obtained legally in Canada, but then are sold to people who use them for criminal purposes, has surged dramatically in recent years compared to firearms smuggled from the United States. But in reality, we don't actually know what the statistics are because the RCMP and Statistics Canada doesn't actually collect these. So this inflammatory article actually came out and was basing it all just down to one interview with one police detective. And we don't really have any statistics to back it up. But because is the case with a lot of Canadian media, it's republished across the country without actually any fact checking on the deal. So what we know for sure is that there are definitely there's a couple of hundreds of guns that are seized by Toronto police that could be traced back to Canada versus the United States. And believe it or not, the ones that can be traced are roughly similar, and they have been roughly similar over the past couple of years. It's usually anywhere between 100 and 250 that are actually able to be able to trace back to either. But we know for sure that the total number of firearms seized overall is actually in the thousands. So there's only a small percentage that are actually able to be traced back. And that's why it's really difficult to make a lot of judgment on a lot of these cases, because there's a lot of inaccuracies and misinformation out there as well. And a lot of these, places that go around about this, they don't really get the full facts and the full picture on the deal as well.
And I think what we have here at the end of the day is it's a scenario where it's clear from the mandate letter that the government would like to pursue this. And, you know, it's long said that to have good policy, you need data on whatever you're looking at. And that's what this government said they were going to do going forward, is that, you know, their policy would be evidence-based. But if Statistics Canada doesn't have that, you have to question how can they do that. And from the media side of it, same thing for the media. They're going off one police officer. And at the end of the day, the gun issue is an emotional issue for many people because they – you know, I'm going to say this, and I think the media does this, and I think it's horrible when they do this, but the media seems to love piggybacking on the mass shootings that we see in the U.S. and turn that to advantage in Canada to push this narrative that guns are a major problem in Canada, and they're coming from the U.S. at that.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite clear that a lot of guns are coming in from the United States because, you know, with their much laxer laws around gun ownership, it's quite possible that a lot of them are just coming across the border, and a lot of them are happening through illegal means. And, you know, we have to remember that the people who use guns illegally are already criminals, and they're more likely to use criminal means to get those guns. So having laws against these are not going to really deter them that much because they're already breaking the law. And the fact that this is just going to make it tougher for legal gun owners to actually own their guns it's not really going to have that much impact on crime. And the fact that this report came out just because of one detective and has then been spread across the country, basically influencing however many people believe about this, it really just goes to show that more due diligence is needed with the media and being able to actually fact check their articles and find out if something is actually true or not before they publish it. And that's something that we're just not seeing with the media these days.
Yeah. And you know, it all comes down to the emotional story as well. I mean, we had the story about about comparing cigarette butts with plastic straws, but obviously the plastic straw was more emotional because of the picture. But as we said in that story, you know, a picture can tell a thousand words, but it doesn't provide context. And, you know, once again, the media misleads on context with this one. So,
indeed.
All right. Are we ready for our firing line?
Let's head on. What do you have for us?
Well, you know, words are a big deal when it comes to a podcast, and words are a good deal when it comes to any kind of speaking. And, you know, Justin Trudeau has a history with that as well. And, you know, he says that the world is moving towards more diversity, and you know, he's right on that front. He's right on that front, especially in the Western world. Now, on Friday, Trudeau was speaking in Ottawa, and he said these exact words: "The world is moving towards more diversity, not less diversity. It's a form of entropy." Remember that word, entropy, where people will come with different perspectives, the advancement of communication, raising standards of living around the world. It means that our communities, our boardrooms, are going to be more and more diverse. Justin Trudeau at the time was speaking at the 2018 Deloitte Canadian Partners meeting, and Global was there to televise the event. He was speaking about diversity and whether or not it's a threat to identity, whether that be national identity or corporate identity. But there's one catch. Entropy doesn't exactly mean what he said it means in the speech. It sounds as though entropy in this case was being used as a synonym for diversity, meaning the same thing, but it's not. Entropy is best defined as a gradual decline into chaos or disorder. Now, entropy also has uses in the fields of physics regarding a system's ability to convert thermal energy, heat, into mechanical work. Entropy is also used in cryptography, ensuring websites are secure. You know, the green little HTTPS locks that you see on some websites, or if passwords are strong that you use on the internet. All of these deal with disorder, randomness, or chaos in a machine or closed box. And when you say that the world is shifting towards more entropy, you're effectively giving a hand to the let's just say the forces in the world who are against immigration and against the mixing of cultures. So, and I think it's a good question here is, you know, will diversity bring in a different perspective than founders generations ago, or will it bring in a fresh perspective? That's something that Justin Trudeau said. And I think if you go to the actual words that were said on this, that's a very good question. That's going to be a question that a lot of Canadians are asking today when they see their neighborhoods and they see their cities becoming more diverse in various ways. And capacities to view that diversity is reflective of the world, and ultimately the Prime Minister feels that to be successful in the modern world, companies that want to be successful need to be resilient and diverse. And, you know, a company needs to do that because a company needs to focus on the interests of, say, North America and the interests of China and India at the same time if they want to increase the profits that they bring in. But he also went on to mention that natures and ecosystems with more diversity are more likely to thrive. And we know that at a very basic species level, a species that has more diversity in it, a species that has more diversity is able to evolve better and therefore have a higher chance of surviving if a new species is to be created. But the missing link in this is that, you know, he feels it's needed in business environments as well as the federal government layer here that we're seeing in Canada today too. And he wound it up by saying, we end up stronger, we end up better, we end up more nimble, and we end up more resilient, and I think that's the goal. And when you look at this, this is the way that the 2019 election is going to be framed when it comes to Canada, at least when viewed from the Liberal Party. And that is that diversity is a good thing. And, you know, I think that if he were to go out on the campaign trail and start talking about entropy a little bit more, I think he might draw support from different parties who feel that diversity does cause a descent into chaos, though I don't think that's what he actually meant with this. But the entire focus on diversity and how it improves systems and how it improves corporations, I think, is where the 2019 election race is heading. And we've already seen rumblings of that as well with the various discussions on the border and immigration that have been going on since the start of 2017. So, you can look forward to hearing that entropy line parroted out by opposition parties and other groups probably that are saying that, yes, diversity does indeed breed entropy, and that's a descendant of chaos. And, you know, when you look at what we had this week, maybe that's what this government is breeding when it comes to, if you look at the pipeline decisions and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. And this was kind of a funny story that came about because a lot of talk on social media was talking about how Trudeau didn't actually know what the meaning of the word entropy was. But I think it's very clear that he knows exactly what the word diversity means. And it just goes to show all of the policies that he's created while he's been in office have gone to promote and increase this amount of diversity that he has been bringing to Canada. Now, while he was talking at this this meeting, this conference that was meant for business, he's talking more about what's going on with Canada as well as a whole. And I think it's quite clear with a lot of the decisions that have been made, like you said, regarding to the border, regarding to immigration, the quotas that have been in place for immigration, and just basically the decisions that have been happening after, that this is what the Liberal Party believes to be correct and what should be happening in Canada. And, you know, as in all politics, there's going to be lots of people that disagree with that. And you're absolutely correct. And that is something that's going to be a major part of the 2019 election race.
And it's really unfortunate that no one caught up on the diversity talk, because I think, you know, you look at this and that's what the 2019 race is going to be. And yes, while entropy might have been mentioned, it's definitely something that people are going to be considering as well. So with that being said, that takes us into our word of the week, and that's entropy, which is effectively a lack of order or predictability and a gradual decline into disorder. And, you know, aside from Justin Trudeau's speech, we can also see entropy in the pipeline decision and how that's led to disorder on the economic front with investors and the NEB restructuring that we saw in Bill C-69. And all of this disorder, led by the Trans Mountain issue and the lack of investment in the economy, of course, leads to our Calgary story with the high unemployment rate. So I think it's fair to say that in Trudeau's story and in our story regarding the economy, entropy plays a pretty big role in that too this week. Even though if the Prime Minister didn't intend to slip that in, it's a pretty good word to describe what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I think entropy can also be shown in our BC story, where we've got a lot of entropy with the Tent City and the different amounts of lawlessness that can be found there. Quite rightly actually causes it to decline into disorder and chaos, as has been the case when there was a huge fire that came about because of that. And also with that, we can see that a lot with the handgun ban, where we see a lot of entropy in the sense where if there is a lack of order predictability when it comes to criminal elements, it does end up causing disorder and chaos when we have such shootings like the Danforth shooting, the van attacks that have been going on in Toronto recently, and all the other problems that have been going on with this. So a lot of the response to the entropy that takes place in society, we have to be careful that the decisions that we make are going to actually focus in on that and not just cause more of it.
That's right. And I believe that wraps this episode of Western Context. So if you guys want full show notes, you can find that at westerncontext.ca. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, Android, Google Play Music, you name it, practically anything. All that and more can be found at westerncontext.ca/subscribe. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook at Western Context, where you can find all the stories that we post throughout the week and keep up with what we're looking at in the news. So with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of Western Context.
And we will always make sure that we look through every single news story that comes our way to be able to put them all together with the greater picture, and to make sure that we're cutting through all that bias and sensationalism that we always see in the mainstream media, no matter what it's about and no matter what week it is, so that we're able to make sure that we can put all those news stories together and put you on to give you the context that you need to put yourself on the right side of the news. So with that said, we will see you next week for another episode of Western Context.